The Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Bemis as the Beaver.
And we're moving on to episode 188.
Fresh Looks.
That's right. Is this Fresh Looks or is it a tool tip?
It's Fresh Looks. Ock, she said.
Ock, she said?
That's right. And
this is Tony Bemis.
Mary Tomich.
And Tom Lawrence.
And you know, I just remembered, we have a soundbite for Fresh Looks.
What are we taking a fresh look at this week?
Oh, there we go. Well, actually, what we're doing is we're taking a fresh look at some open source tools to solve real world problems. And actually, Tony, I want to thank you for kind of conceiving that title, or coming up with that title, because I hadn't gotten that far. I was busy using open source tools to solve real world problems. Now, normally, this fresh look is done as a kind of a review of a Linux distribution or maybe a BSD version or something along those lines. But this week, I'm doing something a little different. I plan to discuss the support I'm providing to the effort to recall the governor of Michigan.
Using Linux to recall the governor.
That's right.
And he was one tough nerd. Can he stand up to Linux?
Yeah. Actually, I voted for the guy, too. So, I voted for him once. But anyway, and that's Rick Snyder. And, of course, for anyone who has heard it in the news, you know, the city of Flint, Michigan had a water crisis, and they had an emergency manager. I won't go into a lot of detail about that, because what I really want to talk about is the project I'm working on and some of the tools that I'm using. Anyway, but they decided to conduct a recall of him, and the recall is really pretty daunting, because you've got to gather, I think it's around 700,000 to 800,000 signatures within 60 days. And that window, it has kind of shortened. And the legislature did that because they just don't like to have people recall them. So they decided to make it kind of difficult.
Right. Now, I've got a question. So recall in general is you're removing the governor from his office, right?
Right. Well, you recall him and then you set up a special election, replace him.
Mm-hmm. Now, is there other implications other than removing him that this does? I mean, is it like just to say, hey, that you did such a bad job? You know, like technically impeaching a president is just convicting him of a crime. Mm-hmm. It's not actually removing him from
right.
office. So does recall have more implications than just?
It does along those lines. And so it's kind of a grassroots organized event. And so, and because I was involved in the recall of Detroit Mayor Kwame, well, in the recall effort, because we actually were not going to succeed. We were falling short of our signatures, but he had so many people dogging him that he ended up resigning. But anyway, so I was involved in that. So, some of the skills that I brought to that effort then were called upon to help with this. So what I wanted to do today is talk about the tools that I'm using, from the signature gathering and validating perspective.
Okay.
Anyway, the first thing that I did is submit a FOIA request for the qualified voter file for the state of Michigan. And, so what they do is when they get that request, of course, they honor it and sent me a DVD that had a 381 megabyte compressed file. Now, unlike before where I would get the voter list from just the city of Detroit for the recall, which was, you know, maybe 500,000, this one had 8.2 million records in it. And it, it's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot. It's an export from, I think, an Oracle database. So, when I went ahead and decompressed it, I ended up with a 3.5 gigabyte file. And the challenge, I think, at that point in time is to take a 3.5 gigabyte file that's a fixed width file and upload it into a MySQL database. And then create a front end so that people who are validating signatures, because the key thing about a recall is that the signatures, you just can't just sign a petition. Those signatures have to be valid voters for the jurisdiction. And I use jurisdiction in a broad sense, not a legal sense, but the jurisdiction that that person covers, which in our case is the state of Michigan. So I'm going to kind of walk through these steps here and what tools I use. So the first thing I did is I had to convert this fixed width file to a comma separated value file. And of course, I have never used awk before. Never. I've heard of it. A good friend of mine, Bruce Barnett, has probably one of the best tutorials on the internet at grimoire.com for using awk and sed. And so I almost contacted him, and I thought, no, I'm going to just talk to him when I see. I'll probably see him later this year, but I'll first of all see if I can do it myself. So what I did is a lot of Google research, and I discovered that there's a nice little command that will take a fixed-width file and insert commas at the end of each field. So that's what I did. So, you know, again, a fixed-width file format means that fields start at a certain column number. And then the length of the field is defined, and then, you know, that length plus one starts the next field. So the file that I received had 25 fields in it. So I had to, and thankfully they provided a list with where the next column, the next field started. So I knew that, hey, this first one was 35, the last name is 35 characters. So on column 36, the first name starts. So I had to provide awk with the field widths. And there's a field width that function, but anyway, a parameter that awk has. So I gave them all of that. I pulled it off the PDF, dropped it in there, and then I had to tell them what the file separator was going to be, which is a comma, and then I had to give them the files, what I wanted out of that, which was all of them. And then to tell them, hey, where to put that. So I did that. And I used, of course, once that was done, it took a little while because we're talking 3.5 gigabytes of data. So once that was done, then I used the head command and peeled off about maybe 50 or 100 just to see if the comma was there. And it was. So I can't tell you how thrilled it was to run my first awk command and see that it worked.
That's cool.
And what's kind of weird, and there's probably a little awk, parameter that will, or option that will allow you to see it happening. But for me, once it started running, nothing was moving. I mean, I could tell I didn't have a prompt, so I knew it was happening. And then I had pulled up Dolphin, and I could see that that something was going on with that file. But
your output file was growing?
Yes.
Because it was actually sticking stuff into it.
It was.
That's cool.
Yep. And so that was great. So then the next step I had to do is, because all this did was insert the commas, I then had to remove all that dead space. You know, by dead space, I'm talking about the space, because even though 35 characters had been allotted for the last name, I didn't see any last name that exceeded that. I mean, like mine has got 6 letters. So I didn't want to have all those spaces
between. You're in truncate.
Yes, exactly. So there was another awk command that was very easy to do. And that just a very short command, unlike that first one I tried. So, you know, I tested it first, of course, and it worked. And I took a 3.5 gigabyte file down to, I think it was like 1-point-something gig. So there was a ton of white space in there that immediately got removed. Now, the methodology that I used to import into MySQL requires that the field content be double quoted. So I then had to insert double quotes into each field, the information for each field, so that it was all set up like that. So what I went out and Googled some more, and I found out that there was a great little sed command. Now, sed is just simply short for stream editor. And like awk, you type in the command. Sed's a little more esoteric. It kind of reminds me of regex, you know.
It uses like regular expressions to try and.
Regex expressions. Yeah. So it wasn't as intuitive to look at as awk was, but I looked at it, tested a little bit, and I thought, yeah, this is working. And so I went ahead and just ran it, and sure enough, I ran the head command a little later, took a look, and sure enough, all my field content was double quoted. And I thought it was, you know, and again, some of you who are listening who use this on a regular basis probably won't fully appreciate someone like a newbie like myself using these tools for the first time and taking a look at a 3.5 gigabyte file. Mm-hmm. Doing this little line and having it applied against the entire file. It was amazing to me.
Right. No, and I agree. You know,
magic, really.
And so somebody might say, well, I can open a file in Excel and do the same thing, you know, find and replace and do it all.
not when it gets that big.
Yeah, not a 3 gig file.
Well, here's the problem. We're talking 8.5 million records. And I think the maximum number of rows in Excel, as well as I think LibreOffice Calc, because I checked that, is I think over a million, but it's less than 2 million.
And I already can tell you from experience,
four times that size.
Those programs, both Excel and Calc, start choking on large file sets mm-hmm. like that. And it's one of the reasons I've had to use that. You know, sometimes I have companies need help on analyze something and we've dumped it in here and it starts choking really bad. But you can just drop to the command line. Mm-hmm. And I've used Sedinok even recently. My bank made some changes and I needed to modify the accounting files that I use for importing into KMyMoney and just dropped to command line, change one little, they had a field they changed all the way around. So I had to insert one field, change another so it imported properly and no big deal.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I ran SED and it, you know, worked like a charm. Now at that point in time, then the data has been completely turned into a comma separated value file with the double quoted content. So it was really ready to go. And so now all I needed to do, because, my provider, I have a 50 megabyte limit as far as the size of the import file. So I then had to, split out, for example, the city of Detroit. If I were to upload the entire file, it was like 56 megabytes. So I had to split it. And of course, I used the Linux split command to do that, which was really pretty easy. I then specified, hey, I want it split at 300,000. So I had 220, I think I had a 20 some megabyte file, two of them.
So you split it on the line, not on a byte level.
No, right? I split it on a line because nice. See, each line was a record and I did not want to split a record.
That's so nice. And so you used the tool split or the command split?
Yeah, I used split and then dash, the option was dash L and then 300,000 and then the name of the file that I wanted it to operate on. And I could not believe how fast it was about 2 seconds, three, and boom, I had my two files.
Huh.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. So then, I had forgotten to add a little intuitive naming convention for it. So it was just easy to go in and rename them what I wanted, you know, Detroit Part 1, Detroit Part 2. Clever, wasn't it? So that's what was happening. Now, one thing I want to mention about awk is that had I not converted to a comma separated value file, they do have a, it's called substring, where you can go in and you can tell it that, hey, I want to go into, I want to go into this column and I want you to search for, a string and then extract, because what I was doing is I was extracting voters by city.
Okay.
And so, I tried that before I really converted. I went back and tried it and it worked really well because I was able to pull out all the Detroit voters. Of course, I had all that dead white space and everything in there that I needed to get rid of. But when you're doing it with a field, you just simply tell it $ and the field number. And then, you just use the little tilde, which basically says, hey, this is the string I want you to look for, and then put it between, your forward slashes. And it will go in and find it. Now, again, depending on what you're looking for, it may take a couple minutes. It may take, you know, more than 5 minutes, which, you know, when you're looking for 500,000 records for, I think it was what Detroit was, maybe a little more than that. It took a while. Now, the next thing I had to do is I had to clean up the data. And by the way, too, one thing I noted is that first, awk command I ran to insert the commas, you have to preface the name, the number of the field with a dollar sign, because if you don't, it's going to just take the literal value and put that in. So what I had inadvertently done when I first ran it is, instead of field 25 holding the county number, field 25 held 25.
Yeah.
I could not figure out what had happened. And as it turned out, when I went back and looked at the command, I thought, that's what happened to the county number. Cause I thought, how did I get that in there?
Oh.
So I fixed that and that was wonderful. But the other thing I found out too is even though, the field, structure was defined, or the record structure was defined, very precisely, there were, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of instances where, field content pushed, field 25 out past, whatever character, you know, whatever column number it was. So, I ended up having to go in and, once I parsed out the city, I had to then sort it by, I think it was voter ID, which was supposed to be a unique field, but, I found at least one duplicate in there.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I was going to tell them and say, hey, you guys got to clean up your data. I'm still working on it, but anyway, so I just sorted it. And I found which ones were pushed out to the right, so I deleted so that the columns then would align, because I was getting SQL or MySQL load errors saying that, hey, your column count is too big. I'm thinking, what do you mean? Well, when it's at line, you know, 20,000, and I would open up the extract in calc, and it looked pretty good. I didn't go down to line 20,000, but then I had to reopen it, sort it, and then I suspect there's an awk command to easily do this type of thing, but I didn't know what it was, and I just thought once I extracted, I could drop it into calc. And then I also added a front column because I decided at first I was going to use the voter ID column for the unique identifier. Mm-hmm. And then when I found out I didn't have, that's how I defined the field. And then when I found out I had at least one duplicate, I thought I'm not going to use that. I added an auto increment field. So then, and I set it as such. So, when I started loading into MySQL, and it was a beautiful thing to watch. Once I got that field length problem cleared up, I loaded 300,000 records without an error.
Nice.
Oh my God, it was wonderful. And then, so I then did a second load on that. So I have like all of Detroit loaded in. And then, what I'm going to try to do is try to load it by county because it's going to be easier outside of, Wayne County to do it that way. So anyway, now the other thing I have to do once I get this in, and I put it in MySQL and I use PHP MyAdmin, which of course is kind of the standard, dashboard interface for, managing MySQL. There are probably others, but that's the one I used. I then have to set up the front end tools that people will then access via the web. So I have set up a little website that they log into, and then I've got a little web page that is a form, so they can then type in the first and last name of the voter. They press the submit button, and those values then are passed to a PHP page that then will run the SQL query against the data, and then will return a list to the user to show that here's the voter's address as published, because that's how they have to validate. Mm-hmm. So instead of guessing, these people are now going to be able to know as soon as they collect signatures how many signatures on their petition is valid, so nice. That they'll have a running total and they'll know how close they are. Because when you're trying to recall somebody, I mean, it's usually kind of a ragtag effort.
Mm-hmm.
I say that in a very respectable way, but it's kind of, these people are not organized, to kind of do that kind of thing on a regular basis. So that's why I was trying to help them out. Those are the tools that I use for that part of it. Now, there's another part when you're going to collect, when you're going door to door to collect signatures. One of the things you don't want to do is to, hit every house on the street. Now you're thinking, well, why wouldn't you want to do that? Well, if three of those houses don't have registered voters in them, why would you want to go to that house?
Mm-hmm.
So the other aspect of the qualified voter file that I'm working on, and I haven't got this completed yet. I'm still working on the query because what we're doing is we're creating what are called walking papers. And so what people will do is they say, we're going to be hitting these streets between these, these house numbers, say, 1800, blah, blah, to 2100. So what I'm doing now is I'm creating a web form where you plug in those two values, the street and the city. And then you press the button and then up pops the whole list of all of those.
Nice. And then
yes.
You hit print and then you know which houses have registered voters.
Exactly. So if this house has no registered voters in it, you go right by it.
That's right.
But here's the thing. There's another little extra step you got to, that I'm doing too. And I'm using Calc for this, another open source tool, of course. What I'm doing is I'm taking, and I haven't figured out yet how to download that in or have it generate a, calc file, .ods, I think it is, file, to open up in calc automatically. It is basically a kind of a copy and drop it into a calc sheet because those addresses, when you think about it, there's even odd. Well, when you're out on the street.
You want, right.
Exactly.
All the evens and all the
evens on one side, yeah.
So there's a function in calc called isEven, and there's another one called isOdd, surprisingly enough. So what I'm doing is I am, in another field, I, basically have that check made so it's either true or false. So then what we quickly do then.
There's an SQL statement that does that too. So you could build that right into the web page.
Yeah.
Oh.
Say, do you want.
That's great because I'm still kind of wrapping.
And it'll be right in the web page.
Yeah.
Yeah. The reason I know, like, I'm not a DB admin. but I have to learn
some
of this
stuff. Well, I'm not
either, and it shows. Because I'm working on a project also that requires back-end SQL queries and posts and stuff.
Okay.
And that's one of the things I ran across is I saw that that's an option that, even odd on there. So you can say, you'd add another click on it. Do you want it split or not? And if you say split, then you run one SQL query that splits, that does two different sections.
Okay.
And you could probably, label it,
Do you have that?
Odds and evens and. Yeah. In my notes, I have the website that explains that stuff.
Oh, great. What I'm doing right now is I'm testing. See, the query is a little different than the signature validation query, which is simply takes two parameters and does a select all the records that have these, for the field that have these two. This one, I'm doing a range. So I'm using the between clause. So, and the challenge that I'm kind of working around right now is, all the little quotes and all the little things that I have to do in order to get that, that query to properly execute. I'm still kind of working on that a little bit, but I think I should have it done by the end of the day. But that would be great because then, I wouldn't have to run those steps in calc to do the is even check.
Yeah.
But because what then happens is, it then will just list. And then that's how the walking paper gets generated is that, if you're walking down the odd side of the street, you got the odd addresses and then the other person's got the even addresses. And so then they get, printed and then the signature gatherers go out with that information. And that's how we're doing it.
Yeah.
So
and you could, it, to give them the Excel sheet or the calc sheet, you can have right, in there, like as part of the output, have that query run another time that, instead of displaying it to the web page, it shoves it into a file, into a temp file, and then it links to that file. So they just click on it, and then you can download it.
See, and I had done some Google research and saw that there's a way to do that. I think you have to define MIME type, or there's some other little things you got to put in place there.
I know that's one of the options if you're looking at the way PHP MySQL works. One of the options is to download direct to an ODS format. Actually, it'll do Excel too, which I thought was kind of neat.
Right.
Yeah. But it'll have some direct downloads to that open document format, so it makes it real easy. I'm wondering, I've never really played with it extensively, but within there is a PHP builder. So after you write the query and a query works, then you can export it and it's supposed to export some of the PHP code necessary to make that happen.
I think yesterday when we were doing our show prep, that's how I'm calling it. You had mentioned that there were some sites or some places, and
I was Googling while we were sitting here, and I was looking at some of the SQL builders. There's a couple of them. There's something called Fluent PDO, and there's a couple different tools that you can load. That's what they're designed is to help write the code. Like if you understand the queries, it helps write the code base to build in forms and for the queries.
Yeah, and I think one of the challenges with this query is that I was going to try to build it from scratch. And it's always better if you've got some underpinnings in place and you just have to plug in what you need.
Yeah.
Unless you're well versed in SQL query building, which I'm not.
Me either. I know enough about it that I use it to do queries against the database that our system's written in when I need information out of it, like when I'm trying to do some statistical information. But I'm by far no expert, and I usually just lean on some friends to message.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, so. But anyway, so that's really the last piece because what I did before is I would just run the raw query and then take it right out of phpMyAdmin and download it that way. But what I think it would be better to do is to have it on a kind of a web front end where it can be generated and then you click on it and then it opens it.
Right.
And especially Tony, if you're able to generate the odd even, so I'll have to.
I wonder if you put this on GitHub or I can talk to, as I'd mentioned, my friend Phil before, who's got GitHub. He is also on the side of recalling Snyder and open source guy and maybe able to help us with this really quickly. Yes. I mean, the guy wrote code like he's blazing fast.
Oh.
So this might be like, oh, I can spend 5 minutes on that and make it all work.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I'll
ask him.
Oh, please do. Please do. And yeah, explain that this is, that we've got this other piece in place, but this is the one I'm kind of quote unquote struggling with. I'm not struggling exactly. It's just a learning process.
It's a learning process.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, I can, I'll ask him how he is at that. I'm pretty sure he writes some of that stuff. So that might be pretty cool. And I know he's also on the side of, he lives right here.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Cool. He's on the side of the cause. So he's got more than one reason to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that'd be great. Okay. That'd be great.
Yeah. I'll reach out to him.
Yeah. And then the other thing I wanted to mention, too, cause that's kind of the end of my fresh looks and these tools that I've been using is that, if you've kind of played a little bit, with Awk and SED and, you're looking to learn more, as I mentioned earlier, my friend Bruce Barnett, he's got a site called grimoire.com and he goes into considerable detail. He works at General Electric. He's some kind of a scientist or something. Anyway, I know him because he's also into magic and,
you
know,
oh, that's magic awesome.
And all that kind of stuff. So am I. But, he goes into considerable detail about these two tools as well as our regular expressions, grep, and a number of other things too. And, apparently his SED tutorial is, like the number one tutorial on SED on Google. So.
You know, and it's funny, cool. I use some of those same tools, especially grep, when we're disinfecting WordPress sites. Grep is very, very handy. I love that one of the people that had hacked a site, they didn't do much to the site other than a bunch of injection, but they used Windows to do it. So I just had to look for the extra carriage returns, the Windows carriage returns in there.
Oh,
and
Grep
made it so easy. I'm like, oh, cool. I just grepped for them. I found the problem. Like, just delete. They found the, you know, added these extensions. So it was really easy to do that. And what it would do is because they added a series of JavaScripts. So what I would do is have to parse it and they add it in the middle of a PHP file.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just go through and rip that little middle out and truncate it by the number of characters and it fixed all the PHP files. Same thing, SED and awk, and it rips through it. And it was a fun little trial. And it was, because these viruses are automated, it's not like someone actually stopped and wrote those. I had more than one site infected, so I always saved my scripts and it was able to remove it from multiple places.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny talking about that extra little carriage return and mm-hmm. from in Windows. As I was, checking into, the file, format for importing, they're talking about the /n, /r, I believe it is, mm-hmm. or some of these, you know, the carriage return or the, anyway, I get, the bottom line is that in Windows, there's like this extra character stuff at the end. And I think for the file that I was importing, I didn't have that because it was done purely in, you know, Linux, I guess. So anyway, but that I wanted to share that as a fresh looks just to show some of the open source tools and how they're being used to solve real world problems.
That's very cool. Yeah. They really, you know, we're not really sysadmins.
We're not coders. We're just people who do this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I have a friend that he's been a Linux and Unix user for years, and like 30 years, you know, for a long time. And he said he remembers that over the last 20 years, he's had this one client, this return client, that they have this gigantic database. It's an old system that they will export it onto a tape backup. Give it to him, and then he will import that in, run some commands against it, and then create reports off of it for them. So they do like annual reporting, or maybe it's biannual.
Backup.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. I mean, like, you know, from 20 years ago, from a long time, they've been. Mm-hmm. This has been his client that he's been doing this with, and he said that over the whole time that the amount he charges, because he has to buy the hardware to be able to receive the tape in. And then over the years, they change different kind of tapes. So then he'll have to buy a new tape, deck and stuff. So he says, he charges so much each time he does it. But he says it's SED and awk that he uses as the main tools to do the sorting and the printing. And he says over the last 20 years, he's made $1 million off of this one client doing it. So
just SED and awk and away you go.
Yeah.
There's a business model, Tony.
You know, here's an odd one where, you know, even some of the Linux tools, and this is the only way we could do it. There is a proprietary bowling software developed in the 80s. And bowling alleys aren't as popular as they used to be. So they only work on specific old IDE hard drives. This is late 80s, early 90s. Mm-hmm. And that's what runs all the pin machines above there. And for every pin machine, there's a hard drive on there. There's no way to buy it. The company's long since out of business, mm-hmm. and the hard drives are hard to find. But we're able to clone them using Linux because it's an unknown file system type. But we're able to use the DD in Linux because Windows actually, if they plug it in a Windows machine, when it tries to mount it, it actually screws up the partition and makes it unusable.
Oh, geez.
Just when Windows sees it, something it does messes it up. Mm-hmm. So actually, we have a bowling alley that we support by doing that, by using DD to clone the drives and doing raw cloning with Linux. We're able to support these bowling systems. And the file, I can't remember the file system type, but it is readable by Linux.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's a really, I don't know what even language it's written in. It's not normal. Oh, it's because it's a proprietary embedded system for a bowling alley that runs on CGA monitors. So the internals is kind of neat. The hardware still works, mm-hmm. but no, it's kind of neat when you can do things like that. You know, it's
yeah, that is pretty.
I haven't made $1 million off them, but bowling alleys don't have $1 million. Right. Not a business model to get into. I'm sorry. Right.
So anyway, but that concludes my fresh looks.
That's really cool, though. That's a neat look at all that.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, we'll see how far it gets, you know, as far as
this is why Microsoft wants Bash in there, because they want access to SED and awk.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So now you can start using those tools on similar tools on Windows. That, mm-hmm. and not
but why would you?
There are no Windows tools that do that type of thing?
Native. I don't know. There's nothing native.
I'm not surprised,
and
I guess.
It's been popular for a long time. I've known people who have done this even one of the backups, when I initially, years ago, I designed a backup system for my clients before cloud backup was like it is now and more mm-hmm. prevalent. I designed one that backed everything up to my office mm-hmm. and to use some of the tools, I loaded Cygwin on their back end in order to run the Linux tools that used OpenSSH and everything to sync it. So it's been kind of available. No one's bothered writing, well, maybe they have, and I just never really looked for it, SED and awk as a binary compatible for Microsoft. Obviously, they could. It's open source. You could just recompile it. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just, you know, streaming editors. But it's not really been available. Most people just load Cygwin and then load SED and awk. So I think that's why Microsoft realized there is a niche of people that do it, and that's why they want to bring the shell in there.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and there are similar things, but it would have to be a full Bash script that does, or not Bash, but Bat script or a PowerShell script that would do that. But you have to be proficient in it. It's not a quick one or two lines that'll do it all for you.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and it's so well documented. There's a lot of support for it. I learned it back in the 90s. I mean, it's been around for a long time. That's when I started getting into using SED and awk.
Cool. You know, all it's right. funny. I just got a text from the coordinator from the recall, one of them anyway, about that they've got people signed up ready to verify. So
awesome.
When's all training right. going to happen? I better get the rest of that stuff loaded.
Right.
I got Detroit loaded in there.
Now I'll reach out to
are you doing more? Are you doing more than the Metro Detroit area? Like,
oh yeah,
you're doing the whole state.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to do yes, but I want to prioritize by population centers, because I'd rather spend my time getting say for example Grand Rapids loaded in. Although I don't know if they'll get a lot of signatures out there, but get that loaded in than say someplace in the UP. I love the UP though. That's the Upper Peninsula.
All right.
So anyway, but yeah, I'll get back to her and we'll get rolling with it.
Very good, Mary.
Okay. Anything else we want to cover on this episode?
No, good episode. Definitely. It's not snowing.
Yeah.
It will.
Yeah.
April Fools. It's that summer.
Yeah. I think our plants died. All right.
All right. So we're coming to the end of the show. This has been episode 188.
That's right. Fresh looks.
Fresh looks.
This is Tony.
She said awk?
Yeah, she said awk.
She said awk. There you go.
This is Tony Bemis.
Tom Lawrence.
And Mary Tomich. See you next time.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show@smlr.us or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can
bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y. Hi, folks. This is Chatter. K. Wisher, Honky Magoo, 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy,
and me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comment, and generally being grumpy at linuxluddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night. Interactive live show. Visit lhspodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.
The Linux Link Tech Show, live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast. On the web, www.tllts.org. By email, techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC channel, thelinuxlink.net, port 6667/ Tech Show. And Flying Rich is so hot.